It is a Thursday. We're joined by the voice of the KU Jayhawks each and every Thursday on the ticket, brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency. He, of course, is Brian Haney. Brian, thanks again for being with us, as always. I know we like to talk about better things. I guess let's start with a positive. I wasn't planning on going this route, but I'm just going to go off the spur of the cuff here. Let's start with a big positive. KU football coach Lance Leipold, definitely a positive for him. He's going to get more money, and KU continues to try to take care of their football coach.
Yeah, no doubt. Huge bit of news yesterday, which obviously came on a good day to have good news following Tuesday night's loss to BYU. The $7 million a year ultimate compensation bump puts him in the top three of the average league salary in the Big 12 Conference, and then top 20 nationally. And I think that's right on par with where you expect to see this Kansas program compete, is top 20 nationally. Obviously, this next year, they have a chance to climb higher than that, with all the pieces that come back, particularly offensively. And so just a lot of excitement to see the furthered commitment and investment in football success at Kansas. You're seeing it literally with groundbreaking on the new reimagined David Booth Kansas Memorial Stadium, and now you're seeing the Jayhawks put their money where their mouth is when it comes to coaching compensation. There's also an additional $1 million in the pool of assistant coach salaries going forward, which is also big. Everybody gets a bump. I don't think that trickles down to play-by-play guys, but I'm going to ask. And yeah, it's a great day all around, because, you know, if you want to compete to be the best and you start to have some success where other more established programs want to pilfer away your guy, you got to re-up and double down and show that, hey, we're committed to this thing, big picture, long haul. Not just Lance's commitment to being here, but KU's commitment to giving him what he needs to continue winning here. And sometimes that's also a little additional compensation for a job well done. And as he delivered just the second ever back-to-back bowl seasons in Kansas history, certainly worthy of another bump. And you love to see that reestablished and reaffirmed commitment to investing in football at KU.
You know, the lay person, okay, the person that maybe is not a diehard sports fan, maybe they follow it, maybe they don't follow that closely. And you know how that is, Brian, is you sit there from the outside looking in and go, wow, a football coach getting $7 million a year, or $5 million, or $3 million, or whatever it may be. And I know when Nick Saban got his big new deal a few years back, I think he was up to $8, $9, $10 million a year, somewhere in that range. I don't remember exactly what it was. And there are a lot of people saying, this is just insane, so much money for just one guy as a head coach. But it was explained, and then I think the same thing when Bill Self had his, you know, contract extension and bump in pay and everything else, is you have to look at it as a business decision. How much money is KU bringing in now that they have a good football program? How much money is Nick Saban worth? I mean, for Alabama football, when they're in the playoffs and winning national championships, he more than pays for himself, even at $8, $9, $10 million a year. And that's what I've understood and read about, is that, you know, obviously a Patrick Mahomes, well, is anybody worth that much money? Well, I mean, think about all the money the Chiefs and their organization, what they're worth now with back-to-back Super Bowl championships. There's the merchandise aspect. There's so much that you benefit from when you have a winner. And KU basketball has been a winner. Bill Self's been paid handsomely for that. Now KU football is becoming a winning program. And I know what I'm trying to explain is that some people immediately go, wow, that's way too much money for anybody to coach a sport. But at the same time, KU benefits more than just the money that they put in, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, this is athletic department money by and large, but his success has a trickle-down effect on the academic side with enrollment. Obviously, when the Hoops win national championships, if you go back and look at it, the biggest spike in enrollment attendance the following year for a 20-year stretch is the national championship or Final 4 years. And now we're seeing the effect of football success on additional students wanting to come here. So it's got an athletic and academic and obviously local business owner influx of you know, increased revenue just with the excitement of people coming to Lawrence on game days and all of that. So it's the price to play poker. I mean, hey, our center's doing pretty well in NIL. As you probably know, we probably don't have to get into that. But, I mean, it's just a sign of the times, and everybody in this juggernaut of college athletics on the football and basketball sides right now, in order to stay competitive and continue to hang banners and go to bowl games, it's the price to pay. And the good news is, you know, there's a lot of donor interest and you know, funding for such salaries and stadium expansions and all that, because winning gets more and more people on board. And it's been interesting to see the enthusiasm and name, image, and likeness, you know, that donors feel like they can, you know, really make a positive impact and contribution beyond simply putting money in scholarship funds. Now they're, you know, having a chance to really impact recruiting more so than ever before. And that's, you know, the brave new world we've entered in. Not all of it is awesome necessarily. I definitely believe players deserve some, you know, compensation for their name, image, and likeness, and that was long overdue. But trying to get a handle on it and some kind of equal footing and regulation on it is obviously a continued struggle for the NCAA and whatever governing body eventually is in control of collegiate athletics. But my point in saying all of that, the brief detour into NIL, is that, hey, college sports today isn't what it used to be. It's not what we grew up on. It's not what it was even 5-10 years ago. It's more business now than ever before, and this is the cost of doing business. The good news is the guy that you're pouring that money into is not only a great success on the field, but he's a tremendous person and representative of our athletic department as well. So you're happy to see a guy like that get a raise and reaffirm his commitment when Washington was trying awfully hard to pilfer him away just a matter of weeks ago.
Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, brought to you each and every Thursday on the ticket by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky, 118 North Midland Beloit, or call them at 738-5701. All right, we shift to the men's basketball team. Tough loss against BYU, not an ideal second half at home. First home loss for KU this season, broke a 19-game home court winning streak. It's crazy, but Bill Self said, and we played the clip the morning of the game, before the game, he mentioned the scenario, you know, BYU, they shoot threes. They're a good outside shooting team. They struggled against K-State, 6 of 31 from three. He said, you know, if they make 13 threes and we make three threes, they make 10 more threes, that's plus 30. And lo and behold, that's exactly what happened. Kansas was 3 of 15, and BYU hit 13 out of 34. They were plus 30, and you needed to be probably plus 15 to win, or plus 20 instead of plus 30. What about the struggles for KU? What stood out to you? Obviously, McCullough didn't play. They struggled shooting the three. Furphy and Timberlake weren't able to hit those outside shots. Dickinson missed a lot of free throws. I mean, what do you take out of this loss for KU at home against BYU?
Well, you recapped it well. You know, the 13 threes, I think, they weren't an inevitability, but close to it. They had just shot a season-low 6 three-point makes at K-State. Yep. You'd like to think you could have fallen somewhere in between 6 and 13. And if Kevin McCullough plays, you've got that perimeter defender who for the last three seasons has been one of the national finalists for National Defensive Player of the Year. You can't convince me he can't shave at least three threes off of their total, right? So yeah, that's a huge factor, just defensively. Forget about his 19 points per game offensively. But if you want to go offensively, it probably would have been him at the line shooting free throws instead of Hunter Dickinson in many of those instances, because if you watch this team for the first 3 months of the season, you know, Kevin, on more possessions than not, particularly in crunch time, puts his head down, drives the ball, and gets to the free throw line 8-10 times a game. Hunter got there 15 times, and it's a complete head-scratcher, and I don't want to come across as critical or more than being constructive, but you cannot have your All-American center shoot 40% on what was a career high of attempts. It clearly became mental. It clearly was in his head. He mentioned as much. I'd like to think that we could chalk it up to a one-off, but I'll be honest with you. His numbers in shooting the basketball, when it's actually like a form shot, not a hook shot or a little touch shot around the rim, have declined dramatically in league play. Entering Tuesday, before Tuesday's shooting display, he'd fallen from the mid-80s in free throw percentage in the first couple of months of the year to shooting 67% in league, a drop of almost 18% in league play from the free throw line. From the three-point line, prior to the shot he hit to tie it at 66 all, he had been 3 for his last 28 over a six-week sample size. So this isn't a one-off. Now, 6 of 15 is certainly an extreme. But the point is, there's been a trend growing here, and he's not a prolific free throw shooter, but he was 73% when he was at Michigan. If he goes 73% the other night, we probably win the game. Right now, he's got a confidence issue with that. And for a guy that's super self-confident in other ways and likes to you know, pound his chest and get into dust-ups and beat an enforcer and all that. You hope that he can rise above this mentally. But it stinks when you're down to seven scholarship players, technically eight, but seven that play meaningful minutes, and then two of them have major shot confidence issues right now, and the other being Nick Timberlake. Nick was actually trending in the right direction with 13 points in two of his last three games, and you know, he's seen him as a driver of the basketball and aggressor in initiating off the bounce, get better and better. The poor kid still hasn't hit a three with any kind of consistency. And his three-point shooting has fallen 16% from what it was a year ago on 220 attempts a year ago. And now we're 4 months into this season, and the sample size on him is large enough to be more than a trend. And so I don't give you that as doom and gloom, but I don't think we can just chalk 16 of 15 for Hunter up to a one-night-off type thing either, because if you really study the numbers, this has been a growing confidence issue with him. So where is the positive and the sunshine and rainbows and all of that? Well, when he wasn't free-throw line, he was actually doing really well for Kansas and dominating in a matchup where they thought that they could feed him, play through him, and he could have an upper hand. He was 17 points and 11 rebounds toward his 15th double-double, which leads the Big 12 and is top 10 nationally. The free throw stuff is something he can work on his own, and I don't think he is fragile mentally to where a performance like that will break him the rest of the way. I think, as I said on the air during the broadcast, thanks to Kent McCarthy, these guys have a gym in their dormitory, and he's hoping that Hunter and a lot of guys were shooting free throws after the game the other night, even just right downstairs from the bedroom, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's a situation where you really got to get Kevin back, and not just get Kevin back, but get November and December Kevin back, because the Kevin that was laboring through the initial pain of the bone bruise was a 4 of 14, 5 of 17, 5 of 18 type shooter. If you look at his game splits going back to the Cincinnati game, so they need a Kevin that is confident and in rhythm. If so, Kevin is your late-game free-throw shooter, not Hunter. And we want more free throws for Hunter than what we saw over the first couple of months of the season. But if these confidence issues continue on for a bit, and you don't want him at the line, you know, doing that kind of stuff, especially at home, that's what was so head-scratching about it. You expect that on the road with opponent fans doing crazy antics behind the basket and an uncomfortable, unfamiliar setting. At home, you almost never see that. I mean, that was the worst free throw shooting by a quote-unquote big man star, and I'm not counting Udoka Azubuike because he was always, you know, a struggle from the free throw line, but the worst free throw shooting from an established big man star that should be able to hit him since the 0-3 title game when Kansas was 12 of 30 and Nick Collison was really struggling from the stripe. So hopefully, you know, a Tuesday night loss in late February is not getting remembered nearly as much as a Monday night in April, because this serves as a line in the sand turning point for Hunter personally. And hopefully, you know, he can get his shooting form back a little bit, because I don't know about you, but back in November when he was throwing in threes at the United Center and then making gestures I can't repeat on the air as the most confident guy in the room when we're talking about the man in the arena and all that, I thought every time he shot it, it was going in. And really ever since early January, that's not been the case when it's form shooting and not a hook shot. So, too long of a breakdown for you there, but that was obviously the most glaring stat on the page. The Kansas team was 19 of 31 from free throw line shooting, and then second half shooting was sub 30% from the floor, which will also get you beat. Yeah. But here's the deal, and I'll stop after this. When you're Kansas, I don't care if Kevin's playing or not, when you're Kansas and you're at home and you still got an All-American on the floor, the Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year, Big 12 Newcomer of the Year, future NBA top 20 draft pick and Johnny Furphy on the floor, whether that's this year or next year remains to be seen. When you still got all that, and you're in the double bonus with 12 minutes to play, and at the 10-minute mark, there's been 14 whistles against the other team, including a technical foul on a player and a coach, man, you should win that game 10 times out of 10.
Yeah.
Because you hit your free throws, you take care of your business, you win in a building where you already, on a normal, you know, without those circumstances day, you win 95% of the time at a Bill Self here, which we're so spoiled. He's so good. And it's just the 18th home loss in 21 years, which is ridiculous. But when you had that good of a whistle going for you, you got to close out and handle your business. And that's not me being critical at all. That's just saying I believe in those other remaining players enough that, hey, you're brought in to do that job whether you got Kevin or not, and they should have been able to close him out. It didn't. So it ends your hopes of a Big 12 title in the regular season, but I hope it's one of those defining moments. Not that we haven't had other losses that could have been this too, but it gets your attention a little bit more when it happens at home in a game you gave away. That maybe there's a circle the wagons moment for this Kansas team, and we look back on Tuesday night versus BYU, and we say that's when these guys got angry, they'd had enough, and they really looked at some of their own in-the-mirror type stuff individually on what they could each be doing better and move past it. I know Bill Self's already moving past it, but you can't move past it without learning from it, and so I hope for some of the guys like Nick and Hunter in particular that really struggled in areas that you'd expect them to be much better, that there's been a lot of thought that goes into that, and hopefully he can get over that mental hump that's been brewing for a while now with shooting the basketball.
Is there too much on Dickinson's shoulders? And I say this, if you 6 of 15 from the foul line, but you look at this KU team, even when McCullough was healthy, there wasn't a lot of room for error. We talked about a lack of a bench, and now without McCullough, you and I have talked about this almost every single week, that, DeJuan Harris is not a guy that you can count on to score 15, 20 points a game, or even 10 a game. KJ Adams can have nights where he could score 15 to 20, but he's not a guy that's going to go off and score you 30. He's not a guy that's going to really hurt you from deep or anything like that, more of a mid-range game, and he might get you 15, but he's not a guy you can count on to get 20. The only guy in this lineup that you sit here and say can consistently give you 20 and 10 is Hunter Dickinson. And if he doesn't give you 20 and 10 without McCullough, then we talk about the leeway for error. The margin of error is already slim and thin, becomes even thinner. Is Dickinson trying to take on too much, or is it that he has to take on this much and that maybe that's getting to him at all?
I think it's a fair question. I don't think the answer is yes, though, okay. Because here's the deal. We're not asking him to be a 30 and 15 guy. Right. They're not. I mean, asking 20 and 10 or 19 and 10, which is closer to what he's averaged, is pretty much what he was at Michigan. I think the more specific question we should be asking is Kansas doing enough to help him with spacing the floor by having any kind of pulse from three?
Uh-huh.
When Johnny Furphy goes 0 for 5, you don't have a chance to spread the floor, because Nick, unfortunately, 4 months in, I think he's a much better player than Nick Timberlake was for the first 3 months. I do. But I'm not convinced we should bet anything more than a nickel that he's going to become some kind of hot shooter all of a sudden, because sadly, when the lights are on and there's 16,000 in the seats and the popcorn's popping, the shots don't drop like they do in practice, in an empty practice gym. And I hate that for him, because I love him. I think he's a great player. He's working hard. He's mentally tough. But confidence-wise, even though Coach Self doesn't like to talk about that with him, I mean, we're 4 months in, and he just went 1 for 9 the other night at home. And so it could click still. As Self has said on numerous occasions, he still thinks there's going to be multiple games where he hits 3 threes and a half. And we saw that at West Virginia.
Yeah.
When he was back close to home, had some buddies there, all that. I don't know what it takes to unlock that. But if Johnny's not hitting and Kevin is out, who's going to spread the floor?
Yeah.
Otherwise, they're clamping down around Hunter. And it's not that we're asking too much of him. It's that all of a sudden, how do we get him a ball?
Mm-hmm.
Force-feeding the post when there's four arms to throw through, and he's not very athletic to begin with, becomes really difficult. You can't just lob it up to the edge of the square like you could for Udoka a few years ago. And so the entry passes are that much more difficult. You saw DeJuan struggle with that the other night. And Juan, by the way, has been brilliant for the last month until four first-half turnovers on Tuesday. The last month prior to Tuesday, he not only led the Big 12 in assist turnover ratio, he was top three nationally. He was shooting 56% over the last month. And ask Max Asmus of Texas how good of a defender DeJuan Harris is. I mean, he was having the best month I think he turned in his entire career prior to Tuesday. But when you're not spreading the floor, it's hard to feed the big fella. I don't care how long his arms are. If he's a little bit flat-footed, which he is, and you got, guys around him that are clamping down to that degree because they don't have to respect the perimeter shooting, man, it gets tough. So I don't think we're asking too much of Hunter, but we're not helping him enough. Is that a more
accurate way of phrasing it? Yeah, no, I think it makes sense.
If we were asking him to be a 30-15 guy, that's asking too much. But do what you did at Michigan. But let's get him more help with a better space floor with some three-point shooting. And Kevin McCullough's return will certainly help in that regard. But Nick's got to be better. Johnny's got to be better. And maybe Jamari McDowell, I don't know that his threes in the last two games are fool's gold or not, but maybe he starts to get an extra few minutes or two. I think he deserves it, so we'll see. But obviously, we're searching for answers here, which we never seem to be this deep in the season. Not every year's a leap year, obviously, but I don't remember too many February 29th conversations with you where we were going back to the drawing board, but that's kind of the spot that Kansas has been in this year. And yet, we shouldn't be down and out, doom and gloom, because there's still enough talent if they can get Kevin healthy. And you still got the best coach in America, bar none, hands down. But in order to get back to thinking like a world beater, Final Four contender, we got to get number 15 back, and that goes without saying.
Your quick thoughts on the matchup with Baylor this weekend?
It'll be way tougher, no doubt. You know, they'll have Love back. They'll be in their home building where they're a much more comfortable team, shooting the shots that we've seen them light up teams with. We will see Misi, who last week was kind of the goat and not the good version of a goat. He missed the free throw that would have beaten Houston for an upset in regulation and kept Kansas very much in the thick of the league race. But he missed it, and obviously they go to overtime and lose. But he is so much more athletic than anything we have in the post, and that gives us fits at times. And you saw that in the first meeting, but Kansas was able to, you know, have a total team effort, swarming defensively, feeding off the home energy. And that's the big thing that Bill Self talks about, is that when this team goes out on the road, I know it's hard to manufacture energy off opponent fans like we do when we're at home, but, man, we play at home, outside of Tuesday night, obviously. When we play at home, it feels like sometimes we've got six guys on the floor. And I'm not talking about the officials, in case you've got a K-State fan listening, which I know you do. But it feels like sometimes we've got six out there, because we're just a much more active, ball-hawking, swarming, just frothing at the mouth, chomping at the bit type team. We got to come out, punch them in the mouth early, and play with that same kind of energy, manufacture our own intensity out the gate. If we do, we can absolutely win away from home against this team. But it'll be a completely different matchup than it was the first time around. And I don't know on Kevin's status yet. We're going to find out more at 2:30 today. He'll practice. I'll try to practice at 3 if he's going to practice at all. But Bill Self said he'd have to put in a full week before they ran a guy back out there. So I don't know that Thursday and Friday would constitute a full week. He's probably on the more doubtful side of questionable than anything. But then again, when you see your teammates suffer through what they did on Tuesday, knowing that you could have made a big impact had you been able to be out there, sometimes in an injury situation like this one where it truly is up to the player, it's not anything structural. It's truly up to pain tolerance, load management, all that. Sometimes when you watch your guys and do what they just did, it makes you have a little extra fire in your belly to get back. And so we'll see. I don't know. But you could also say, because Kansas has now been ruled out of the Big 12 Conference title race, by and large, maybe you rest him one more day and get it back for senior night. That might be what they elect to do. But I think he's still coming back. I'm still optimistic. He's a great kid, by the way. It's just been a really frustrating situation for him and really unfortunate timing for Kansas to lose your best player for 5 of the last 8 games. But once you get him back, we can start to have different conversations. But this current group, to be everything we've talked about them being without Kevin, you're going to have more of a pulse from 3 and obviously hit the charity stripe shots when you get them.
Absolutely. All right, time for the off-the-wall question for you. Today is a leap day. This is an extra day, a bonus day, 366 days in 2024. Next time we'll have a leap day, leap year will be 4 years from now in 2028. What is something that you would like to see, something else you would like to see, but only once every 4 years?
You know, I made the joke yesterday that it's a presidential year. It's a leap year. I suppose we're due to lose a men's basketball home game. and those happen more frequently than once every 4 years, but it kind of feels like, you know, every Olympic year, which now is every 2 years, we lose at home. Because usually you do every once in a while have that completely perfect home schedule, which we thought this year would be after they beat Houston and beat Baylor. But, yeah, that's the okay, you answer that question. Beyond that, I'd have to put some more thought into that. What would you answer your question with?
Oh, come on. Don't do that to me. Actually, I would play off the election part is that I would like to see that, you know, I'm okay with just the elections once every 4 years. Just be, you know, I would actually push that to longer if I had to. But I don't need an election every 2 years or every year. I would be just go ahead every 4 years, maybe even longer, because I get tired of all the disgruntled people yelling at each other about their political views.
Yeah, I'm with you there. No doubt.
Yeah,
no
but doubt. You had a good answer, though. The KU answer is good. You wouldn't like to see it. You wouldn't like to see KU lose at home ever. But if you said, hey, they're only going to lose once every 4 years at home, you'd take that in a heartbeat. Absolutely.
Absolutely. How about this, if you really want to think positively and think optimistically? How about once every 4 years, Lance Leipold has Kansas competing for the new extended, expanded college football playoff?
That's a good
one. How about that?
That's a good one. I think Jayhawk fans will sign up for that every day of the week. That's not bad. Also, I would say that at least once every 4 years, Brian Haney gets a raise. You know, I mean, Oprah Winfrey, you know, it was like, you get a car. Just start that whole
right.
thing at KU. You get a raise, and let it funnel all the way down, man.
I'm going to move my offices over to football right now. I'll go, I guess I can see their offices are under a crane and a bulldozer, but yeah, I need to.
Hi, my name's Brian. I'm over here at the football offices. Hi, my name is Brian.
Exactly.
That's funny. Hey, man, I appreciate the time. As always, safe travels to Waco. We'll talk again with you next week.
Sounds great.
Take care. Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, one of the best in the biz, and we appreciate him every single Thursday on The Ticket, brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky, 118 North Mill and Boyd, or call them at 738-5701.